This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 8:46. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, Khoo Soo Chong and Tan Chung Han. Now, we're going to take you through the biggest business news of the day, including news on Felda, Proton, MyEG and household debt. Now, let's start with Felda, guys, because there was a bit of a kerfuffle where newly appointed Felda chairman Tan Sri Shahrir Samad over the weekend made comments that he was looking for there was missing 4.3 billion ringgit of the agency's funds. But now he's saying, actually, that's not true. The funds were just spent on some other issues that perhaps he was not aware of over the weekend.
Yeah, so a bit of an about turn, volte-face, according to the French, and makes you wonder, you know, basically, not that the money was lost, it was spent on a lot of things. And on one side of the equation, you've got, you know, the company FGV saying they spent 1.7 billion ringgit on Felda settlers. Every family got a payment of 15,000 ringgit cash. And then they also spent stuff on, for example, real estate assets, yielding assets, as the case may be, to the tune of about 1.4 billion ringgit. They bought stuff in Bukit Katil at about 304 million ringgit. Then they bought the Grand Borneo Hotel in Sabah. They bought the Grand Plaza Service Department in London. They also bought a building, the National Institute of Valuation building, besides stock purchases in Iris Corp. Kind of like makes you wonder why it is that a company that looks after the interest of Felda settlers would be buying hotels and apartments in Sabah and London. And they've also went on a bit of an acquisition spree. They bought stuff, for example, they bought Pontian United Plantations. They bought over two batches, about 1.3
That's
billion ringgit.
That is a lot of shopping.
They've been buying stuff. And the thing is, a lot of this money was spent without it being accretive to the bottom line, because ever since its IPO in 2012, it's been steadily making less and less money until it swung to a loss a couple of years ago. So it's been buying stuff with no discernible impact on the bottom line.
Yeah, certainly. You know, and also when you consider the kind of outlook that Felda and FGV had during their IPO, you know, it was basically the sky's the limit. You know, that might certainly, you know, have clouded their outlook when it came to all those kind of purchases they had. You know, but going back to your question, you know, about why, you know, a company like Felda that is supposed to look after the well-being of its settlers, you know, would go about these other ventures and high-risk ones. And I think it goes back to the underlying principle of diversification, right? Because at the end of the day, when you look at the commodities space, it's cyclical in nature, you know, so in order to, like, perhaps hedge against those other risks, you know, within the palm oil industry, then you perhaps can get those real yields from the real estate and whatnot. So, I mean, you can kind of see the theory and the logic behind those, you know, those moves. But obviously, when it came to execution, yeah, they certainly dropped the ball there.
So, I mean, we've been talking about Felda for the past couple of weeks now. But for me, what really kind of made me pay attention to this story was the kind of flip flop, right? So, I'm really nervous when a leader of, you know, of a huge agency or national body like this can say, well, you know, we're missing 4 billion ringgit, and then the next day go, oh wait, we found it. I don't know whether that's the trust deficit that we have here, but it makes me question the governance of this. I mean, what led to that initial statement, and what led to the backtracking of that?
Two words: stakeholder management. I think it's the management challenge that the chairman of Felda Global Ventures has to deal with now, because obviously FGV has many, many masters, and it's got to appease sometimes competing desires of its stakeholders.
Actually, breaking news here. I just got a response from Felda here, basically clarifying the alleged U-turn. So they're saying, basically, Tan Sri did not say that the fund was missing. That was wrongly reported or selectively quoted. He is consistent with his statement. So that, I just literally got it seconds ago, okay. Right here on BFM 89.9. How about that? But then, you know, also, not bad. But also, I think, you know, I would like to give him that room for the benefit of the doubt, right? Because look, I mean, he's only, what, 6-7 weeks on the job, right? And, you know, this is a massive organization that is just mired in all kinds of murky deals. He has got to deal with legacy issues and on top of that, try to turn things around. It is no easy task, you know. So perhaps, you know, what happened over the weekend hopefully will just be, you know, at least when it comes to his tenure, a one-off of, and hopefully you can steer Felda in the right direction. Tan Sri Shari did say that he will make time for us. So again, stay tuned.
I do have to say, though, I appreciate his candidness or his frankness.
Candor
when talking about issues like this. He's been quite quite frank coming on board Felda to say he wants to shake things up. He wants to really kind of really change things up from the bottom and from the top up as well, right?
And
top
also
down.
Yeah, and also when I'm reading this latest statement from Felda, or not statement but just response from Felda, you know, the initial intention from Tan Sri was to question the accountability. So when you have that kind of initiative from the top, I think hopefully that would spell more positive times in terms of governance for Felda, and hopefully that will also trickle down to the settlers as well.
Well, let's move on to another company that we've been focusing a lot of attention on this past couple of weeks, Proton. Now, if you remember, the second finance minister, Dato Sri Johari Ghani, he said that the government has no objections on how Proton's sale to a foreign strategic partnership could even be 51%. Now he's saying we'll know for sure who the strategic partner will be after February 15th. Here he is.
Yes, we need the partners. Because kalau Proton alone, dia tak boleh pergi overseas. We need foreign partners to come and partner with Proton. And then so that we can build this car, bring new technologies in order to introduce better car that the world can buy. Kalau kita buat kereta cuma untuk Malaysia saja, tak boleh. It's not sustainable.
That was the second finance minister, Datuk Sri Johari Ghani. He has a point, saying that it's more important to look at regaining customer confidence, really capturing overseas markets. Malaysia is only so big. But who will get that prized position of that strategic foreign partnership?
Well, the market would be very, very surprised if it were anyone other than Geely of China, because obviously, although Geely, Peugeot and Renault were supposed to be the last shortlisted three candidates. I think that the press have been going on, or rather the internet press have been going on to say that Geely is the one to go for, and that will also be aligned with Prime Minister Najib's overtures to China and the 144 billion ringgit worth of deals inked last year, and also of course the contingent upon that 1.25 billion ringgit soft loan granted to Proton for them to find a strategic owner, right, or partner. It would tick all the boxes in that respect.
Okay, so on Proton's part, yes, it's important for them to get the strategic partner, and it will open them up to new markets, etc. But what's in it for the foreign partner? I mean, what will they get by buying into Proton?
Well, a whole plethora of advantages, right? You can produce in Tanjung Malim and then export out into ASEAN via the trade pacts that have been inked under ASEAN. You've also got access to Tanjung Malim, fantastic technology there. I've been there. It's a great plant, underutilized clearly because of Proton's market share. You've got access to Lotus Engineering and Suspension and Handling, which is par excellence in the world. Very, very good stuff, which Geely doesn't have. It's also got, of course, a 15% market share in Malaysia, which is currently where Proton sits, down a little bit from the 43% it used to have, or rather 60-odd percent it used to have, but it's still market share nonetheless. It's also got access to 7.49 billion ringgit in tax credits, which is about 32 billion ringgit in profits, which can be discounted back, which is so huge that, of course, taxes consultants say it's got to be discounted somewhat. It's also got all access to DRB Highcom's plethora of conglomerates under its umbrella. So it's got a lot of things going for it.
Okay, so quite a pretty girl. I mean, might have some
secrets. It's got some
there.
Real estate as well, on which the plant sits.
Shah Alam, if I'm
Shah Alam, of course. Tanjung Malim, of course.
Yeah, but then also, it looks like you've covered all the bases there, Chuang. But also, I think something else that we have to keep in mind here, when it comes to, say, what Geely really brings to the table, I guess besides the size and the prospects of economies of scale, but like in terms of like the tech transfer, I wonder how much they really bring to the table, though, because again, just using this really, really broad brush, Chinese corporates or Chinese companies haven't exactly been known for adhering to international best practices, right? Hence you do have that twinge of concern when it comes to Chinese brands and the association with them thereof, when it comes to marrying Proton with a Chinese automaker, I kind of wonder if that really helps the brand equity in terms of, safety and the luster.
Well, you might say Proton brings Lotus, but Geely brings Volvo. Right, of which they own. But more importantly, I think, is they bring the Chinese car market to Proton.
Yeah, and, that's, you know, very attractive.
The Chinese car market, that's the headline there. Yeah.
Is millions, not hundreds of thousands, millions of units every year. And although Geely has a 5% market share in China, Proton also brings its, you know, it's got that, you know, it's got that Volkswagen Beetle, you know, Skoda Yugo slant, because it's the people's car kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's all that. And, you know, the thing is, we don't like Proton all that much in Malaysia, but it's quite a pretty girl. And it's so pretty that back home in China, Geely shares have been surging in the last few weeks on the back of this speculated deal.
Now, but real quick, though, we being the, you know, say, the urban middle class here in Malaysia.
From a brand perspective.
Yeah, you know, yeah, but, you know, still, it is, you know, still pushing out units by the tens or thousands, you know, every month. You know, but, yeah, you know, so I think it's also important that we make sure that we, you know, have a measured context when it comes to approaching this Proton issue. But I think what's key here, given these recent statements here, is that they are now acknowledging, they being the government, are now acknowledging our shortcomings, you know, and that ceding that 51% or that majority stake potentially to a foreign partner, I think hopefully will help us turn the corner. But I think the admission, you know, is, I think, equally as important besides the headline there.
Well, it's been 32 years, so it's about time, right?
Yeah, admitted, yeah. Like, we've basically, you know, you had Johari saying, you know, we can't do it on our own. We can't, you know, expand beyond our borders without foreign help. So we need this. So it's a sign of the times.
Yeah, Malaysia has got to get itself out of this national asset mindset, because if you want to have a corporation, it's got to be able to assess on its own merits. And that means international sales, not just domestic sales.
Well, guys, it's just a couple of minutes up to the 9 o'clock news, but let's take a look at the fact that the latest data by Bank Negara showed slower growth in household loans last year. However, we have economists who spoke to the Star Biz who say, well, the high level of household debt in the country is actually far from over and may even creep up. Who knows?
Yeah, I know. Real quick, again, this is slower growth. It does not mean that household debt is not growing. It is still growing, right, but just not at that rate, you know, that alarming rate that we have been accustomed to seeing over the last couple of years or so. No, but yeah, you know, again, certainly, you know, you could read this, you know, several ways. You know, on one hand, you could say, okay, great, you know, this is, that means there's more appetite for, you know, for a debt-fueled economic activity, you know, on the household level in terms of us being economic agents, and that could translate well to banks, you know, because they are reliant on, you know, handing out those loans to, you know, us consumers. But then at the same time, you also got to wonder, you know, it's like, are we at the risk of being over leveraged? And, you know, when it comes time, basically, to pay that back, can we pay that back?
Well, the higher we are in terms of household debt to GDP, I mean, that means your margins are very slim should anything go wrong, right?
Well, you don't have much headroom, right? Yes. Because the interest rates start to go up, and, you know, the overwhelming, you know, majority of mortgage loans in Malaysia are floating rate loans. There's two main catalysts behind the possibility of household debt increasing this year. And of course, the Star had a whole page on this. They spoke to RAM Ratings. They spoke to, I think, a couple of other economists in Maybank, I think. The thing is, there's two catalysts, right? Number one is the Prima housing loan, housing program, which is affordable housing to less privileged members of society. That's going to drive up loan applications and loans on that front. There's also increased loan limits for civil servants to buy homes, motorbikes, computers and smartphones introduced in Budget 2017. So on the back of these two catalysts, we're going to see that number inching up from 89%. Perhaps not this year, but definitely by the end of 2017.
And then something to look out for this week on February 16th. That's Thursday. You've got fourth quarter GDP data coming out. So look out for that print here. Now, again, it certainly is one of the components to our debt to household debt to GDP ratio. Now, so we're going to look at the overall health of the economy and basically see, you know, how much of that is debt fueled versus, you know, other real economic activity. We'll see how that pans out.
All right. Well, let's take a look at the overall health of the Bursa Malaysia this morning. We'll get the opening numbers for you in the News Bulletin with Lynn Mark on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.